Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, man? How we doing?
Doing well. How are you guys doing this morning?
We are doing great. Appreciate you taking time to join us. Charles, I want to start with the announcement yesterday. Julian Edelman, looks like his career is coming to an end after 12 years with the Patriots, retiring. I have a couple questions for you. Number one, is he really done? Because I kind of feel like people are halfway expecting him to end up at Tampa Bay at some point with Tom Brady. And number two, would you like to insert yourself in this argument that is raging throughout Twitter about whether or not Julian Edelman is a Hall of Famer?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, you know, look, if you listen to Edelman's camp, you know, it sounds like he's done. You know, it sounds like the knee, I don't want to say it's degenerative, but it had gotten to the point last year where he felt like, you know, even with the repair and you know, rest, it just was not getting any better, and that his, you know, his ability to compete at a high level isn't really going to change. I would tend to think that Tom Brady's treating it like a retirement, you know, and Bill Belichick's treating it like a retirement. Different situation than Rob Gronkowski. So I made a joke yesterday about the flights to Tampa, which I don't think you could ever rule that out, but I mean, you know, initially, obviously that's what you think. But I think he's done. He's hanging it up. As far as, you know, the Hall of Fame thing, I don't have a Hall of Fame vote. This is probably one of the times I'm happy I don't have to, you know, argue with people about whether or not I would vote for him. I think it all depends on how you quantify the postseason versus the regular season. You know, his regular season numbers are okay. You know, I think he had a pretty good, you know, solid regular season career. It's going to look worse and worse as time moves on, just because wide receiver stats in general are going to be bloated, and including, you know, slot position receivers. But, you know, he was a guy who factored into a lot of really major postseason runs, won a lot of rings with the Patriots. And so I think, you know, if you're a Hall of Fame voter, you have to quantify whether or not that postseason career carries enough to make him a Hall of Fame caliber player. I think he's a really good slot receiver. I think he's a guy who helped move the slot position becoming more of a weapon in the NFL, a mismatch weapon forward. I got a lot of, you know, flack for making that statement. Everybody wants to argue, you know, the 15 other slot receivers that they think are more deserving. But, you know, I mean, he's a really good player. It's to me, there's an element of that Patriots dynasty that I think is going to fall in sort of the, you know, when you go back to, say, like the 72 Dolphins and that undefeated season, you always hear, you know, people who were longtime Hall of Fame voters would say, well, here, you know, here are all these really good players that played on that Dolphins team and during that era where the Dolphins were really great, who didn't make it into the Hall of Fame because they were really good, but maybe not elite. I think there's going to be questions about really good players for the Patriots over the expanse of that 20-year run who maybe aren't considered elite, but there will be arguments about whether or not there should be more Patriots in the Hall of Fame long term.
So, Charles, you were all over Clowney to the Browns almost happening before. And now it looks like it maybe is happening. My question on this is, well, first of all, is it? But also, I just can't wait to see what someone is going to pay Jadeveon Clowney at this point. Do you have any idea?
I think it's going to happen. You know, I don't – let me put it this way. I have a very good inkling that as long as he passes the physical, it's going to happen. And, you know, I think what happened with the Cleveland Browns is they pursued him last year. Obviously, there were, you know, the Titans, amongst other teams, were interested. You know, I'm very confident Cleveland put the best offer on the table in terms of money for Jadeveon Clowney. He turned that down, and ultimately it's going to be a massive financial mistake for him because, you know, I think what a team like Cleveland's going to end up paying him now, probably in the range of, I'd say, like $8 million, you know, for a single season of work. And then, you know, there'll be the ability to probably get a couple million dollars worth of incentives in there to push it up if, you know, meeting sack totals or playoff type stuff. But, you know, I think the money on him at this point is he's probably an $8 million one-year kind of deal player where you're waiting to see, you know, whether or not the knee bounces back. If he's in the door, say, in April, and he's part of your off-season program, your training program, all the things that you want to do, you know, you get him into the defensive scheme and sort of what the expectations are, so maybe he's not freelancing as much as he did. You know, look, at with the Titans, I spoke to somebody in the Titans organization. They didn't – the interesting thing to me was nobody killed him inside the Titans organization, which I thought was interesting because, you know, you have a bad, sour note kind of a season, and usually people are lining up to shell a player. I think from what I heard, there was frustration that, you know, physically he wasn't quite in football shape, and it led to some frustration on his part, some freelancing. He wasn't always doing everything, you know, what his general assignment was on the defense. He was pressing to make plays, which you do see, you know, with players who are like, hey, I'm here on a one-year deal. I got to make some plays. I got to put some numbers up. And you know, I think that knee plagued him a lot more than at least I realized last season with the Titans and obviously ended his year. So I think for the Browns, it's let's take a look. We really like this guy. And then their thought process, I can tell you the Browns, Andrew Berry was a guy who was with the Philadelphia Eagles when the Eagles considered trading for Clowney when Clowney was with the Houston Texans. I think Andrew Berry has seen a ton of film on him from Houston to Seattle and then Tennessee. And I think he's of the mind that if you get this guy in a room with, you know, Myles Garrett, you get him into a defensive room with Pack McKinley, some of these other guys that are on one-year deals, you know, there's an element of guys to sort of play off each other, the competitive nature. And I know there's some disagreement about, hey, you know, maybe Clowney was at his best when Watt wasn't always on the field with the Houston Texans. I can tell you the Texans don't feel that way. The Texans never felt like he was a better player without Watt on the field. I think they felt like, you know, when they could stack those two guys, it made a really big difference. And I think that's kind of what the Browns would think with Myles Garrett. They need someone on that front. You know, look, they had Olivier Vernon last year. I think they feel like Clowney, healthy, is a better player than Olivier Vernon.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Charles, it really has been amazing to watch the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this offseason maintain this group that went out and win the Super Bowl last year and now adding to it as well. And look, I don't know what the reaction to this around the league is going to be because the running back room already has Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette. But then you bring Giovanni Bernard into the mix as well, which
right.
I don't know if you agree with this or not, but I feel like could be a huge weapon for Brady in the passing game out of the backfield. What do you think of that fit and that decision by Tampa Bay to bring him in?
Yeah, he's more of a James White kind of player. And, you know, I'll be completely honest with you. I haven't had a chance to watch the cut-ups with the Bengals. The offensive line was bad. I think he was a guy who probably was looked to pick up some blitz pickups more than you would want a player of Giovanni Bernard's size, you know, to have to handle things like that. I've heard he did well in a lot of those situations. When you look at the cutups, I haven't seen them myself, but, you know, anytime you have a player who, like I said, is sort of James Whitish, meaning somebody who can, you know, he can do a lot of things out of the backfield, particularly catch the football and be an effective matchup like that. I don't know if I'd say a Deion Lewis, but I mean, he's cut in that sort of similar fashion, smaller, faster, gives defenses something extra to think about in terms of who is the right player to match up with him. And, you know, he'll catch the football when Tom Brady throws it to him. So, I just thought when I saw it, I'm like, of course, like this is ridiculous. They give if I looked at Tampa Bay's setup, I never really liked. I mean, Ronald Jones had his moments. There's no question. He bounced back, obviously, from having a really poor rookie season, has become more of sort of what the Buccaneers expected when they picked him up. But, you know, Leonard Fournette, Ronald Jones, I never felt like they had that, like I said, James White sort of Deion Lewis element in the backfield. I do think this is the guy that gives him that. And there are a lot of people who are going to say, hey, you know, it's been a few years since he's been any good. All right, well, show me the Bengals team and show me who's been, you know, just an absolute great player over the last couple of years, particularly any player whose performance was predicated on an offensive line that has been terrible for years. So I think this is the perfect kind of signing for the Buccaneers. You know, he's a guy who can come in. He's going to be in a rotation type of style in that backfield. You know, he'll get plenty of rest and always be fresh and be a matchup player. And they just keep getting richer. I look at the NFC and it's ridiculous to me how many other problems there are with contenders in the NFC. And yet we see what Tampa's done. Even look, you know, Russell Wilson and all the drama that's going on in Seattle, that's not good for that organization. The Rams lost a couple key pieces of their secondary. And oh, by the way, your defensive coordinator who, you know, really remade sort of the scheme after Wade Phillips. The San Francisco 49ers could be starting a rookie at quarterback, you know, at some point. It's unreal to me how Tampa's had this entire offseason stack up. Not only start returning the 22 starters, which is crazy off of a Super Bowl winning team, but then, you know, still adding some of these pieces. And by the way, Antonio Brown, I still think there's a chance he ends up back there. Like, yeah. I don't know really what his market is externally.
Well, you're just going to sleep on the Lions, but I get it.
Yeah, right. Just, oh, another year of underestimating.
Yeah, that's right. That roar is just so close to being restored. Hey, okay, have I asked you, Charles, about the Justin Fields narrative yet? Even if I have, I still want you to address it. Like, what is your reporting? What do you believe of Justin Fields? I mean, I'm seeing people having him go 10th right now, which is just crazy to me. But what are you coming away with on him?
When you say crazy, I mean 10th as in like falling to 10 or being off the board at 10?
I'd take him number one.
Okay.
Okay, wow. I'd take him number two.
You know, I don't – look, here, the thing with Fields is he had a really – I think, you know, the uneven performance last year. You know, he had some games that honestly were not great. Like, he had some pretty bad games last year. Now, that said, I don't want – I like the guy. I think he's really good. I thought the performance against Clemson, you know, all I hear from guy Clemson's defense stinks, and, you know, it was, you know, you're putting too much stock in one playoff game. But
then we're going to put so much stock in an Indiana game. But, okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm with you. You know, I think you got to take the entire cumulative performance. You know, I think you hear the whole first-read thing. He's a first-read quarterback. You know, how often does he, you know, look at the percentages. How often does he really get to a second read? Well, you know what? The truth is a lot of really good quarterbacks are first-read quarterbacks. And that's because they play in systems where, you know, their wide receiver first read's open. What are you going to do? Not throw to the first read if he's open? I mean, go back and look at Tua when he's playing with four first-round wide receivers. The first guy he looks at is usually open by 10 yards. So, you know, I think there was an element with Ohio State that you know, he played in a system where there were a lot of open first reads. I do think there's a little bit of a hit on him because of Dwayne Haskins. I remember when Haskins came out and I was asking teams that were kind of nitpicking him beyond sort of the, you know, hey, what are the leadership qualities? What's the character of the guy? They talked about how he led the country in Power Five, like open receivers, like in, you know, however they quantified that and how that really made people nervous. And, you know, so I don't know, man. I don't know what to tell you. I think people have been hot and cold on Fields, sort of been one camp or the other. I'll give you an example. There's an AFC team last season. It was probably mid-season, and there was this idea that AFC team would be in the hunt for the, you know, one first, second, or third pick, kind of in that range. So I'm asking the general manager, I'm saying, hey, can you stack up? Where do you see the second quarterback coming from? And I thought, you know, hey, how close are Lawrence and Fields? And he just, like, pushed Fields completely out of the conversation. He's like, ah, no, 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 no. He's like, it's Lawrence. And then he said, you know, Zach Wilson, and then it's going to be the rest of these guys fighting to be, you know, we'll see who the third receiver off the board is. And I said, really? I said, you know, you wouldn't automatically put Fields even in a conversation in the top one or two picks. And he was just so dismayed. He said, no, 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 he's not. He said, he's not, you know, the overall skill package there is not, you know, what he would want. I don't know what to tell you. I don't, people screw up quarterback evaluations all the time. And somehow we got Mitch Trubisky being taken out of. You know, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes. And there's always some reason for somebody screwing up a quarterback evaluation. I guarantee you five guys go in the first round here. There's going to be a couple nasty duds. And, you know, maybe it's a Mac Jones.
He had some open receivers this year.
Yeah, I'm sure Mac Jones probably had a couple open looks at wide receiver. I liked Fields. You know, I watched him. I thought he was a pressure performer. I liked, you know, his ability to make plays. You know, I think he fits to me more where the league's going in terms of quarterbacks being able to do things off script. But, you know, I'm not one of these guys who's going to sit here and tell you that I'm a draft eval. You know, I'm not, there's so many experts on draft Twitter that I'm just like, dude, I'm not throwing myself in these conversations. Everybody's, I made the mistake of, I said the other day, and this is literally, I was repeating something that I had a couple NFL teams tell me about, you know, Penei Sewell out of Oregon. And, you know, had a team that really loved him, said, you know, hey, if the Jets decided to take him at two, which they're not going to, but if they did, between he and Becton, this was another opposing team that plays the Jets, told me, I bet you those are the top two NFL tackles, not left or right, top two NFL tackles 3 years from now. That's how much this guy liked Becton and Sewell as sort of bookends. I said this on Twitter, and I'm not going to repeat who it was, but someone I know and respect texted me and just like went off about how, you know, Rashawn Slater was the, you know, better. I'm just like, dude, whatever, man.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to have this stupid argument with you and sit in the dark and watch, you know, cut-ups of offensive tackles dropping back, you know, what they're for. Like,
look at that punch, like, Charles. Look at that punch.
Yeah, I like it. It's fun. Like, I understand it, but the mock draft thing to me is, it's all shots in the dark. I've done mock drafts in the past. Like, I know, look, I hate to tell people, but the truth is, when you're a national reporter or really any reporter, you don't have the time to invest to really break this stuff down, and you don't devote your life's expertise to it. And guess what? Even the people who do in the NFL, they completely screw it up. Dak Prescott, the Cowboys did everything they could to not draft Dak Prescott, okay? If they could have had Jared Goff, they would have taken him. They could have had Carson Wentz, they would have taken him. They tried to take Paxton Lynch, didn't get him, and then they tried to take Connor Cook.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that's right.
You literally screwed up every possible way you could to land the guy you're paying $40 million a year to. What does that tell you about evaluation of quarterbacks in the NFL? It is an imperfect science. Anybody who tells you they know that this guy is absolutely going to be the greatest thing ever is so full of crap.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Sorry, guy. I didn't mean to deliver a 3-minute complaint about how guys don't.
I loved it.
Look, listen, there are people paid millions of dollars in the NFL. Like, every organization devotes millions and millions of dollars to making the right decisions on draft day. And if every third guy you pick in a draft turns out to be a, you know, really good backup or starting caliber player, you're an all-star. If you bat 333 in your draft, it's the same as batting 333 Major League Baseball. Think about that.
It's amazing. Charles Robinson has been our guest, joins us every week here at 9 o'clock on Robin Rexo. Charles, have a great week, man. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
We'll get your mock next week.
When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Charles had to say there. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on Thursday, April the 29th, and Friday, April 30th on 102.5 The Game, presented by Founders Brewery, Apple Collision Centers, and MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Looking forward to that coming up here in a couple of weeks here leading up to the NFL draft. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports for joining us in the last segment. So why do you think – so that was interesting to hear Charles talk about Justin Fields in this draft, talking to an AFC executive that was in the mix for one of those top three picks, and basically the executive brushing off Justin Fields like, yeah, he's not in the same conversation with the Trevor Lawrences and the Zach Wilsons of the world. And look, I mean, that surprises me, and I've been surprised by the narrative around Justin Fields in this draft. I think he's really good. I think he's going to be a really good player in the NFL. Of course, you know, depending on where he ends up and the situation that he's in, just like any other quarterback. But I feel good about Justin Fields in the NFL, but apparently there are a lot of people that are down on Justin Fields and his NFL future.
Yeah, and like Charles said, I mean, look, so there's, what, five guys? How many of them are going to be what people hope they be based on their draft position? I mean, even if Justin Fields falls to 10, that's a very high pick.
Sure.
And that's a high expectation. So of these five guys – right, there's not a six that I'm not familiar. I mean, it's five first-round possible quarterbacks, five expected first-round quarterbacks.
Correct.
Right? Fields, Lawrence, Wilson,
Lance,
Jones. And
Mac Jones,
and the great Mac Jones.
Yes,
who you know, Justin Fields. Oh, his open receivers, all that talent around him, but Mac Jones. Oh, this guy's incredible.
Gonna move up to get him in the draft.
Yeah. So of those five, if one of them lives up to the draft positioning, then that's pretty good. That's the reality of drafting quarterbacks in this league.
Agreed.
So, I mean, look, I just look at everything we've seen from Justin Fields, and like Charles said, the one read thing is a knock. Now, it's funny because Dan Orlovsky is the guy who introduced the whole, like, first one to leave, last one to show up, which then, you know, everybody jumped all over him, and he kind of walked it back. He also, like, showed film that kind of refutes the one read idea, but there's numbers on all that stuff. And I mean, there's another problem is like, okay, well, you know how it's probably easier to be a one read quarterback at Ohio State because your first read is open by 5 yards.
Yeah, I mean, like throwing the ball.
So it can be count against you because you have those guys, but then it can, you know what I mean? Like it can count both ways.
Sure.
I mean, so I don't know. I think Justin Fields has all the tools and has improved tremendously. And if you want to talk about grit or anything like that, I mean, the guy got his ribs crushed and kept going. I thought he showed a lot in the playoff. And okay, so Clemson's defense wasn't like a vintage Clemson defense. What does that mean? They only had 8 pros out there?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Hey, but I mean, I've long since 1998 was the year that I decided that I should shut up. I mean, I won't, but I mean, I decided that I have no clue because that's the year that Ryan Leaf came out. And I mean, there was nobody more sure than him. So to me, so who knows? I don't know. Justin Fields is gonna be great. I just like, but when I compare him to a Mac Jones or a Zach Wilson, I don't know, man. I think I'd go the Fields route. I think the growth he's demonstrated in just 2 years and one half year really of starting, it's pretty significant.
I think it is too, but a lot of love for Zach Wilson on the board right now. Yeah. I can't wait to see how that plays out. Yeah. Number 2 overall going to the Jets. It's going to be fun.
Mahodgers?
Yes, Mahodgers.
Raj Holmes?
Yes.
Zach Raj Holmes?
Yes. Going to be just slinging that ball around in New York.
I like Raj Holmes better.
Okay.
You don't like Mahodgers?
No.
I kind of like Mahodgers.
Okay. All right. When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators and revisit the poll question of the day. Is David Poyle placing a little bit too much faith in this Predators team? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join 102.5 The Game tomorrow night from 6 to 7 p.m. for Smashville Live featuring former Preds player Colin Wilson, hosted by Robbie Stanley, which is me, and by Lindsey Rowley as well. You can also watch the show online via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com. Smashville Live brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Looking forward to a little Smashville Live action tomorrow. Colin Wilson on the program.
That show used to be the Colin Wilson Show.
It did.
When he was with the Nashville Predators.
Bringing it back. I think he did it at Dave and Buster's, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, so bringing it back.
I enjoyed Colin Wilson when he was here. Those guys would always do those pregame, you remember those little, you know, the little soccer things they do? And he would often be sitting there reading a book.
Yeah, he would. Yes, he would.
Kind of a, you know, interesting guy.
He was interesting?
I think there were some Wednesday nights where he showed up to Dave and Buster's in like a tank top and flip-flops.
That sounds about right. Yep. Hey, whatever style works.
Exactly.
They're vibing. Everybody's vibing That's on the right. Predators right now.
We're vibing, Robbie.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Big deal. The Nashville Predators, speaking of that local professional hockey team, not a lot done yesterday at the trade deadline. They add Eric Gudbranson, bringing him in on defense. I don't know what sort of a role he's going to have. My guess would be when everyone's healthy, Gudbranson's not going to be in your lineup. That's just a guess. And who knows when he's going to again. Remember, he's coming from Ottawa to here. So there's going to be a quarantine period before he's even available to play for the Nashville Predators at this point. So a minor move made yesterday by David Poile and the Predators, but no move made in terms of selling and in terms of collecting future assets for some of your expiring contracts. And the question is that the right approach from David Poile and the Predators? That's the subject of today's poll question. Do you agree with David Poile's approach to not be a seller before Monday's trade deadline? 54% say yes, they agree. 46% say no, they do not agree. So pretty split down the middle there in the poll question today.
So it went back the other way a little bit from the last check. Okay.
Good poll question, Porth.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was pretty good. I had a different suggestion for it, but it's fine. You normally ignore me.
That's all right.
So CMA's made the point, and it's a point to keep in mind that, you know, if you want to make some significant changes, you obviously can do that in the offseason. Again, this turned into the discussion of, all right, you're down to, can you get something from some expiring deals to help you a little bit, build your assets a little bit, and not necessarily blow up this run that you're on. Now, I will say that taking Granlund out, given the state of this team, if the whole team was together, I think take Granlund out and you're not necessarily punting. You could argue that you're punting if you take Granlund out, given the current state of the team, which, as far as we know, well, David Poile said yesterday, there's no one coming back this week.
Yep.
And this does not mean, but you can count on them next Tuesday.
Right.
Or whenever they play the Chicago.
I think there's some uncertainty here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
and there's only 13 games left, so it's not like you've got a ton of time left to get people back in the fold either.
So you've got that, and you've got the importance of the playoffs, and it's not just – there is more to it. There is the business side of it. You have to – there's a lot of factors here, a lot of moving parts. But I was surprised, one, to hear that, like Poile said, you know, that really he's been resolved, I think, for at least a little while, really to not sell.
Yeah.
That was surprising. And then – just the comment on the question of, is this a cup contender? I mean, I know it's kind of funny to say that out loud, but that is why you buy or stand pat, right? If you think you can make a run in the playoffs?
Yeah. I think it was a fair question. And it's interesting, too. Like, I know it feels different, but they're not really in that much of a different spot than they were this time last year at the deadline. Like, the format's different. I mean, you're in a different division now, and the playoff format's even different. So it's very difficult to compare the two situations, but you're right on the bubble. I mean, you're right on the edge, just like you were a season ago. And David Poile talked about that yesterday in his press conference on having more confidence in this group despite the position that they're in this year than he did this time last year. Here's what Predators GM David Poile had to say.
Really probably reached the rock bottom, if you will, with what took place in the first part of this season. Just a lot of players that didn't play well, a lot of things went wrong. And I just think our new coaches, starting with John Hines, has really established himself with our team and how we want to play. And again, it's got a real good buy-in for everybody. You can see the excitement with how our players play. I mean, after the game, and you, when we win a game, the how much fun they seem to be having with each other. It's just been a wake up call. I was really glad to see Ryan Ellis return to our lineup, and especially pleased with his comments to say that when he left and when he came back, it's a totally different team, and that's exactly what we wanted to have happen. A lot of players have just renewed energy and a better performance in the game, and a lot of new players on our team that weren't here last year at this time that are playing significant roles and look like players that could be playing significant roles for us in the coming years. So a lot more optimism today than say there was last year at this time.
So David Poile, as he said there, a lot more optimism about this group than he had about the group last year. And look, I think it's obviously easy to say that when you've won 12 out of your last 15 games. I think the question you've got to ask and answer if you're a Predators fan is David Poile maybe putting too much faith in this team and too much confidence in the hot streak that they've been on as of late? Or do you really believe that it's not a hot streak? Like, they've just turned this thing around, and this is more along the lines of what this team is now moving forward.
I don't know. I think it's been really impressive on a lot of fronts. It's also been incredibly impressive from the goaltending perspective.
Yes.
And that's the one thing that, while you want to believe that UC Saros has taken a step to like he's just on a different level, it's still a pretty short period of time to know that, right? 15 games.
I'd say so. At the end of the day, do you feel like this approach leading up to the deadline and yesterday is all just banking on the fact that UC Saros stays hot?
I think it's a big part of it. I mean, I think there's got to be a dose of realism involved here. And like, David Poile knows this. Like, UC Saros is not going to keep up a .960 save percentage. Like, nobody's going to do that. So you know that if you're David Poile. But I do think it's a fair question to ask, okay, it may not be .960, but as he turned a corner here where you feel good about .925, like, if you get .925 consistently out of Saros, you're going to win a lot of hockey games. I mean, that's a really good starting goaltender save percentage in this league. So maybe the Predators and David Poile believe that Saros, while it's not going to be .960 and he's not going to be playing on a different planet like he is right now, maybe he's turned a corner in their minds, and there's something that they can point to that makes them believe this is more along the lines of what he is moving forward.
See, another thing here is, so Gover had that really good point about Pekka, which is interesting. It's interesting that this started right during that. I mean, I wouldn't have made that connection. Right after the, you know, comments about him wanting to stay here. But whether it's that or something else, there has been, I don't think there's any question, an intangible maybe assistance from all of the doubting and just how the negativity, all the trade talk, all those things help galvanize the team, right? Okay, well, now we just talked about how great you guys are, and your GM just put his money where his mouth is. So now I think that the pressure changes. The pressure is there. I don't think there's been pressure because it's like, everybody gave up on him, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's easier. I'm not saying it's easy because it's been very impressive what they've done. But those conditions, I think, sometimes create that. Now we're going to see how they react to, okay, now go get in the playoffs, and here's a great schedule for you to do that. And no idea when you're getting anybody back either. I mean, there's a lot on these guys right now.
Well, it's interesting, too. Like, the deadline comes and goes. You've made this decision. And look at the three games this week. You've got Tampa at home tonight, and then you're taking on Carolina twice. I mean, you're about to find out in a hurry what this team looks like. Now, I get it. Like, if the playoffs come around and this team makes it, hopefully at that point you've got some more bodies back and the team looks different than it does right now. But, I mean, this is a heck of a time to be playing Tampa Bay, Carolina, and Carolina back to back to back.
Yes, it is.
I'll also say what I said yesterday, that I think it's unfair if fans change their expectations now that they kept Granlund and Hala. You better go win in the playoffs. I just don't feel like that's fair because they are going to be heavy, heavy underdogs.
Right. Like, I don't think it's fair that you would change your expectation as a fan as to what you expect the end result to be. But I do think it's fair to, like, ask the question, like, okay, if you believe that they can't beat a Tampa or a Carolina in the playoffs, why are you doing this? Like, why are you holding on to these assets? Like, I think that's absolutely fair.
So if it doesn't happen, I think it's fair to be upset with David Poile and the management by saying, all right, you kept all this group together. You could have gotten some assets in return, and you got beat in the first round by Carolina. Like,
well, what if you don't make it? What if you don't? Very, very possible.
It is.
I mean, Chicago's within 2 points. You got three straight games against them next week. You don't know how healthy you'll be. Very possible. Yeah. And if that's the case, you know, there's a lot of anger at Poile a few weeks ago. It'll come back.
When we come back, some interesting comments made by David Poile yesterday on the futures of Mykael Granlund and Matthias Ekholm. We'll react to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Make sure you stay tuned for Darren Donica Chase. They're going to have the Eddie George press conference coming up from TSU right at 10 o'clock to begin the show. So make sure you're staying tuned in for that. Right now, discussing all things Nashville Predators at the trade deadline yesterday. Not a ton of activity. The Predators make a small move to go bring in defenseman Erik Gudbranson from the Ottawa Senators. It would be Gudbranson's fifth team in the last 3 years. So a lot of movement for him, giving up a seventh rounder in 2023 for him. So, the price is not anything that you feel you're totally broken over the bank about. But an addition nonetheless, Joe Rex. We made fun of people yesterday. We owe the people an apology for making fun of the 13% yesterday on the poll question that said to buy. The Predators technically were a buyer yesterday at the deadline.
Yep. Good job, troll bots. Apologies. And per Twitter, either a terrible or wonderful get for the Preds.
Yes.
Preds Twitter.
There's really no in between.
I'm talking Vingan and his Micah Blake McCurdy. Terrible. Willie and Hal. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So there you go. You can
decipher any way you want to.
You can find whatever you want to find on Twitter.
That's right. Twitter continues to be the gift that keeps on giving. Joe, some more interesting news coming out of the David Poile press conference yesterday regarding the future of a couple of key players that we've talked a lot here on the show today about. Let's start with Mykael Granlund, because obviously I think in terms of the run they've been on as of late, the Ekholm discussion for a trade, I think, largely went out the door a couple of weeks ago. But I was still leaving it open to the possibility of Granlund potentially being on the move. And now the trade deadline's come and gone, and we know that Granlund's going to be here the rest of the year. But he is a free agent after this year. And the question is, are the Predators going to make him a priority as they move forward here in the future? And I asked David Poile yesterday at the press conference about Mykael Granlund and his future and whether or not he would be interested in bringing Granlund back into a contract beyond this year. Here's what Predators general manager David Poile had to say.
Well, it's not the right time or place, and I have not talked to Granny nor his agent, but again, he's been a terrific player for us, and if he's interested, we're interested. He's certainly played really, really well. There's a lot of things in the offseason, starting with expansion, that we all have to deal with. Once again, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. But I would have to say that where we stand in terms of our relationship, his performance with our team, our happiness with him, his happiness with us, is without exactly asking him, I would say it's probably at an all-time high. So I would certainly love to engage in a conversation with Mikael and his agent after the year to see if that's a possibility.
So that was David Poile yesterday at the press conference talking about the future of Mykael Granlund. And look, Joe, I mean, we said this going into the deadline. Not everything has to be figured out at the deadline as regards to the future of this team and exactly what it's going to look like moving forward here. But to me, an additional way that you can kind of sell this, if you're the Predators, that the decision to basically stand pat is the right one, is if you find a way to bring Granlund back in the fold. Like, if he's a part of the team next year or for the next couple of years, whatever contract you would come to an agreement on there, then I think you look back at this decision, even if you're the Predators and you get bounced in the first round or whatever the case would be, I think you look at it and say, okay, well, they at least they didn't lose Granlund after that. He's still back in the fold. But if you don't, I still think they're going to be open to a lot of criticism here. I'm interested to see what that looks like, because you've got the expansion draft coming up, so you're not signing Granlund before the expansion draft. He's going to hit free agency. is your offer going to be competitive enough to where he wants to come back? If it's in the same ballpark, does Granlin really like it here? Is that something that he wants to do? I mean, I think that's an interesting question as they move forward here.
Right. I mean, that outcome to me helps answer the – I mean, look, if they don't make the playoffs, then you know, people are going to be upset. If they don't – like, okay, to me, let's say they make the playoffs and they take Tampa Bay to 7.
Yeah.
But they don't re-sign Granlin. Okay, well, don't make the playoffs completely flame out from here, but if you keep him, then I think that – I mean, that's the better outcome, right? And that, to me, would be – and it's not like Poile made it sound like he has any sort of inside information that's going to happen. But that's a big part of this. If you're not going to get anything for him with his deal expiring, if you can bring him back the way he's played this year and the way the uncertainty at down the middle moving forward, that would be big. That's the biggest part to me of this, of making this a successful decision.
And then yesterday I thought maybe the strongest comments that David Poile made all day were in regards to Matthias Ekholm. Now, we know Ekholm has been a part of trade rumors that we've talked about here on the show. He was number one on the Athletics big board. I mean, Pierre LeBrun, Elliot Friedman, everybody was talking about Matthias Ekholm and his future with the Predators. And David Poile, very strong in his stance yesterday about Ekholm and about his desire to keep Ekholm a part of the fold here in Nashville moving forward. Here's what Preds GM David Poile had to say.
In terms of expansion, I think we have that covered. I mean, I'm not losing Matthias Ekholm in expansion, if that's what you're asking me. I've got that covered. I mean, again, Matthias has been a good player for us. And again, his name got thrown out there a lot in trade baits and different things. But I mean, my next conversation with Matthias will be after this year about how he thinks he fits into the future of this hockey club and whether he would like to be here longer, not whether we want to trade him.
So that was pretty honest stuff from David Poile yesterday about Matthias Ekholm, saying when it comes to the expansion draft, I'm not losing Matthias Ekholm to expansion. And the next conversation that I'm going to have with Ekholm is about his future here, how he fits into it, and whether or not he wants to be here moving forward. So, I mean, that was about as direct as it gets from a general manager discussing a player and their future here. And it sounds like David Poile is not trading Matthias Ekholm. It doesn't look like he's going anywhere.
Yeah, and that look – that was the blow-it-up model of what Poile hopes and said is rock bottom from 15 games ago and you know, the weeks preceding it. So that's great news, you know, if you're a Preds fan, if you can keep him. If they can work out a long-term deal and Matthias Ekholm can be a part of this thing, just like Josi will be, just like Forsberg will be, we think. I mean, I'm talking long-term, yeah. Like several years. Just like Ellis will be, I think.
We think.
I mean, something, you know, one of these foundational pieces could go, but I think the most likely change is probably down the middle.
I think so, too.
And Ekholm, you want Ekholm to be part of your team.
You do. And I think he's going to be a very important part of this group as they move forward here. The Predators back in action tonight, taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. They'll have another crack at the defending Cup champions tonight at home at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop at 7 o'clock. Pre-game at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, good show. Enjoyed it?
Hockey, baby.
That's right.
Vibing with some hockey.
Vibing. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We are vibing. Darren, Donica, Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.